very fascinated with this book. It's called The Whale Song Translation. Actually, I first heard about you through a friend of mine, Barbara Santos, and she was here, I think it was back in November, and actually we were at a First Friday event in Wailuku, and she told me about your project, and it sounded really interesting, and I think you actually were going to be at her the writers' conference in San Francisco, too. Did you go to that?
I attended the conference in 2010 and 2011.
Oh, it's a great conference.
And recently I've not gone to that particular conference, but it really changed the landscape for me in terms of the contacts I made and spreading the word about the book.
Yeah,
meeting agents, other authors especially. It's really interesting to talk to other authors like myself, debut writers,
mm-hmm.
who have a passion for what their individual projects are, and to compare and contrast, you know, our journeys.
Yeah, I was checking your biography out here. Your bio's very interesting, and you have a unique history that puts you into a very good position to understand communication sound. And maybe you could give us a little background on your what you did and what your qualifications were to really go into this field you've been so fascinated with.
Yeah, so just to be clear, the book that we're referring to, The Whale Song Translation, is a work of science fiction. It's a novel. But in fact, I'm a lifelong math and science dude, as I like to say. My 25 years as a Silicon Valley software engineer. I adapted voice technology for communication devices, and that led to 5 patents in wireless.
Wow.
So during my work over the years, I've been fascinated by the theoretical and physical foundations of speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a eureka moment when I discovered that speech is really an evolved process of shape writing and shape matching in our brains.
Now, that's interesting because, you know, I've always been interested in speech since I've been in communication since a pretty young age. And, you know, as I'm talking to you, I'm recording this. And, of course, I'm looking at the sound waves up and down, up and down, up and down. And they make interesting art, of course. And when you get on something like a Mac and you can see the pictures that sound makes, it's fantastic the way the colors and things dance when you have sound. But you kind of went into even more depth with this, obviously, because you were working with people who are deaf as well, and you learned a lot about the way sound is processed or understood in the brain, correct?
So, exactly. The vice president of my startup company I worked with gave me a one-month opportunity to develop a prototype and demo a speech-modulated shape-writing application that I demonstrated at the Fremont campus for the California School for the Deaf in the late 1980s. And it's designed like a video game.
Wow.
It utilizes visual feedback in this very unique frequency representation of the vowel and consonant phonemes of language.
Mm.
It utilizes this visual feedback to help the deaf children correct their pronunciation. So maybe what you don't realize is when you're speaking and pronouncing correctly, you do that because you finesse the adjustments to your vocal tract to pronounce correctly based upon hearing your own voice in real time.
And, you know, I have to admit, having been in radio most of my life, I'm addicted to headphones. And I have to say that headphones, for me, work in a sense that way, because when I hear my voice, I can adjust and know what's coming out through my mouth as I'm hearing it. It's a strange sensation. Unless you're a DJ, you might not understand that. In fact, some people come into the studio here, and they can't handle wearing headphones. But it's hard for me to actually talk now on the air without headphones. And, you know, my voice may even sound different when I don't have my headphones on. But it is a sense of, I think, what you were talking about.
The brain is really remarkable at adapting to new circumstances. And I think that's what you're describing. Just as a point of reference, for fun, think about the smoking caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes, yes.
That scene? in the book and in the Disney movie, where he's blowing these alphabet sculpted shaped smoke rings.
Oh yeah, yeah.
As he speaks.
Uh huh.
And, well, you and I are doing that.
Really?
Every word is a different shape in the frequency domain.
Wow.
And our brains, as exquisite discriminators of frequency, are in real time decoding the key frequencies of the phonemes, you know, the vowels and consonant fundamentals,
uh-huh.
in a connect-the-dots fashion, and regenerating those shapes in our minds so we can compare and contrast them to a dictionary of shapes we've stored, and that's how we decode what we're hearing another person speaking to us.
That is fascinating.
And that process inspired the basis of the interspecies communication technology in my book, The Whale Song Translation.
And the book is based here on Maui.
Absolutely.
And it's very, you know, you talk about specific places. I just opened to a place when you're talking about the people jumping off Black Rock and a whale there. But you know, I know you have been here and you've talked to Greg Kaufman before. Of course, whales, we just celebrated Whale Day a couple of weeks ago, and whales are a huge part of not only tourism here, but local people just loving it. And of course, when you go out on a whale watch cruise, they take a microphone. They started this years ago. They drop a microphone into the ocean, and you can hear the whale song. And I know we've had musicians who've come out here before, and everyone from Marty Dread to Paul Horn to other people have serenaded the whales before. And they, scientifically, they say you really can't maybe communicate, but the good musicians swear that the whales respond to the sound of the music and come and do hear the sound. So tell me about what you think could happen in the future if we really were able to understand and decode the sounds the whales make.
Well, so let's just back up a second.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the great challenge is to decode
mm-hmm.
their language first. I mean, so obviously if we can magically decode the ingredients of their language, then we can begin to have a conversation. Now, I'm writing a trilogy. I'm starting the sequel to the first book along those lines, what would be a cetacean, what a cetacean conversation would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's astounding to think that the very technology in our smartphones is going to give us the basis for having that conversation and for allowing other big brain beings that communicate with sound the opportunity to have a virtual opposable thumb to express their thoughts and their voices.
Now,
I'm a speech scientist and an engineer. I'm
uh-huh.
telling you that wait for the second book.
Well, you know,
you will be fascinated because this is going to happen. It's
well,
inevitable.
I can't help but thinking of E.T. and when I'm not doing a spoiler alert here. Everyone's seen that scene where they finally set up the communication between the aliens and the people on Earth by the sounds. And again, there's that moment where there's this great breakthrough where they realize that the people on the ground can send a tone in the spaceship can respond and dom 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 dom. You know,
that was Close Encounters.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. It is
No,
Close Encounters.
It's Steven Spielberg.
Yes, it
is. That's The Binding Tie.
Yep.
And I do state that my book is written in the spirit of Carl Sagan's Contact and Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about a communication breakthrough with another species. So the book unfolds very similarly to Carl Sagan's book, Contact, in terms of the nature of the communication. But the difference is Carl Sagan's talking about ETs.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we need to devote our attention to the big brain beings on our very own planet
mm-hmm.
because they have the capability. They have, well, whales have by far the largest advanced brains by far in the solar system
mm-hmm.
on planet Earth. at least.
You think more so than dolphins?
Well, the size of the dolphin brain is about the size of a human brain.
Yeah, but it's only because they're smaller than the whales. I mean.
Well, so that begs the question, what is the relationship of brain size to intelligence?
Yeah.
That's to be determined. The common mindset is it's related to the ratio of body size.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tend to disagree with that, take a devil's advocate perspective, and say a supercomputer is a supercomputer, no matter what it's attached to.
Hmm.
So a 16-pound advanced brain with gobs of gray matter and spindle cells and all the basic machinery that humans have is also the same mammalian, advanced mammalian brain in all cetaceans.
So,
whales and dolphins.
So I didn't realize that. So a whale brain is 16 pounds.
So a blue whale's brain is 16 pounds.
Wow. That's pretty
A
impressive.
Human brain is 3 pounds.
Wow.
Again, it's not so much the weight or the size, mm-hmm. but the fact that it's an advanced mammalian brain,
mm-hmm.
physiologically and anatomically similar to our own.
Mm-hmm.
The big question is, so they're plumbed for intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
If they have the means to develop intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you know, we do know, and everyone knows pretty much, especially here on Maui, that the whales change their song every year. And there's never been an answer to what creates the song or how that song is decided, you know, and how that song is necessarily conveyed. Of course, we do know, and I think this comes up in the book, that sound is their own sonar, and their sound communication is key in their survival and breeding instincts. And of course, when the Navy came in with sonar and the low-powered frequencies, there was real concern about what's going to happen when you throw in these other terrible intrusions of noise into a pristine, well, it used to be pristine ocean. But there you have this sound invasion that is deadly at some frequencies, deadly to dolphins and whales.
Yeah, so let's talk briefly about the threat posed by human-generated sounds
mm-hmm.
on the health and safety of marine mammals, and in particular the Navy sonar experiments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hot off the presses, you can go to a website and you can see the Navy's application for renewal of ongoing authorization from the Department of Marine Mammal Fisheries to conduct their experiments in 13 North Pacific locations, including Hawaii.
I didn't see that.
In 2013 and 2014.
Where do you
go? Like a Marine Mammal Protection Environmental Impact Statement. And it assesses the impact on cetaceans of their 180-plus decibel sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all of their sanitizing language in this document, about mitigation procedures. Even they have to admit in this document that over 55,000 big brain cetaceans will be, quote unquote, affected by their hellacious sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just, they admit that the sonar pulses exceed 180 decibels minimal at the source. And I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the sound pressure level.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give us an idea of what that is?
120 decibels is equivalent to an amplified rock concert
mm-hmm.
in front of the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And 140 decibels, which is 10 times 10, 100 times more power,
mm.
is equivalent to a jet plane takeoff at close range,
mm-hmm.
you know, full engines, full throttle.
Yeah.
And any length of exposure time is dangerous and the threshold of pain. Now, ratchet up to 180 decibels, the minimum the Navy admits their sonar pulses are being broadcast at, that's another 10 times 10 times 10 times 10 more power. It's equivalent to being right at a rocket launching pad.
Mm.
Hearing loss is inevitable. So imagine. Now, this is all based upon the transmission of sound in air, these measurements.
Mm-hmm.
Water is a much more dense and efficient medium for transmitting sound. So the adverse impact on organisms at similar distances to what I just described is even more pronounced. And since whales need to communicate exclusively by sound, what are we waiting for here? I mean, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the NRDC has just come out. Pierce Brosnan is a leading spokesman on the NRDC website, advocating for the Navy's sonar program to be amended, to be moved away from whale-protected areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I urge all of your listeners, for the sake of the whales, and the dolphins and all marine mammals, to go log into the NRDC website and sign a petition that they have online to send to the Navy to state that you would like to see them take corrective action.
Can you repeat the website that people should go to do
well,
this?
Well, it's just the NRDC website.
NRDC dot what?
Well,
it's dot com,
the National Resources Defense Council. And just Google NRDC and sonar, and you'll get a hit for that particular website.
Okay.
And maybe Pierce Brosnan. Oh, my website has a link to that website.
And what's your website?
And my website is my author name, www.howardstephenwithav.pines.com.
howardstephenpines.com.
Or alternatively, you'll get to the same place if you go to thewhalesongtranslation.com, the title of my novel.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book, does your book go into this very subject matter?
That's the major subplot of my book.
Mm-hmm.
So I've dramatized the impact of the Navy's sonar on the whales of Maui.
Mm-hmm.
Big time in the nature of the story and the plot, interwoven with the main plot of a major paradigm-busting communication breakthrough with the whales. So the book's main message is clear. It's that respect for and the protection of cetaceans is best served by raising public awareness about their potential for language and intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So let's drop an experiment into the water, an experiment of the type of the blueprint that I've set out in my book.
And can you go us and give us a little idea of what that blueprint would be?
Well, I don't want to do any show spoilers, but it's a variation on the theme of the speech therapy sound shape tool that I described.
Mm-hmm.
We're teaching hearing impaired children how to pronounce words.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a variation on that application, audiovisual feedback of the frequencies of sound.
You know, I do really believe that there is going to be a day when we do understand and are able to communicate. I just in my heart, I really do feel that day will come. I don't know when that will be. I think there's a lot of people that would love to see that happen. I hate to admit it, but we all have a tendency to... Oh, what's that term when you you humanize an animal, or you know, and you shouldn't. I mean, all the scientists say never try to put your own thoughts and processes upon another animal or a mammal or any kind of thing, because what we're and the way we are isn't the same necessarily as the way some other being may be thinking and acting. But when you go out on a whale watch, and you are close to these whales and you see a whale breach and you see a whale do a tail flap and you see a whale out there, and you cannot help but feel connected in spirit to these amazing, magnificent beings, and you do feel the power and the majesty and a lot of awe. You know, a lot of awe when you see how amazing they really are.
So I spend the bulk of the first two chapters of my book slowly but surely in narrative form building the case that you're just describing for the likelihood of their intellectual and linguistic potential based upon all the things that we know about their behavior and their songs, their sociability, their curiosity. And then the book takes it to the next level, because what if, in the sense of Carl Sagan, I'm proposing my own spin on what I think their language might be. So that's the value added of my thriller, with
And you have, the book is in the future? Is the book happening?
No, I just published it a month ago.
No, I mean the book setting, time-wise, is it in this day and age or is it in a future day and age?
Oh, it's in the present.
It's in the present, okay.
It's in the present. It's mm-hmm. I'm saying that both as a writer and as a scientist, mm-hmm. I've designed an experiment that can be dropped into the water right now mm-hmm. to test this principle, mm-hmm. to give them the chance to see the visual manifestation of their sounds and to give them the opportunity to react accordingly, just as we do, just as the hearing-impaired deaf children did at the School for the Deaf.
So let me get you right, because I may be misunderstanding, and our listeners may not be 100% clear. And since we've been talking a while and new people are in the car, the book is called The Whale Song Translation. It's by Howard Pines, who I'm speaking about. He happens to be in a beautiful, beautiful place by the ocean in Albion, as we talk right now. A lovely town I've had the honor to have gone through many times on the way to Mendocino. And you can see whales off the coast there during, I don't think it's whale season right now, is it?
Well, the gray whales are, in fact, this is the weekend of the Mendocino Whale Festival.
Is it really?
And
oh.
I am kicking it off by doing a reading of my book at the Gallery Bookshop on Friday night.
How wonderful. I love Mendocino.
So the whales, the gray whales, not the humpback, uh-huh. the gray whales are cruising by as we speak as I look out the window here.
How wonderful.
At the swells and white caps of an advancing storm. So I want to thank you guys for sending us another Pineapple Express.
I know. I keep praying our Pineapple Express will reach you because it's so drought-ridden.
Because
it's
of
scary.
The drought.
I know.
Yeah.
It's been unbelievably dry season. So now, if I'm getting you correctly from what you're saying, you have created a thing that's similar to what you already have created for people who are deaf, and this what you created could actually be dropped into the ocean and is as a visual.
Well, it would have to be built and dropped into the ocean, so that's obviously a leap, but it can be done because look at the SETI project. Mm-hmm. You know, those gigantic array of antennas out in the desert to capture the radio frequencies from mm-hmm. distant stars.
Mm-hmm.
This would be much simpler, much
mm-hmm.
simpler.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's all spelled out in my book, the game plan and my devil's advocate perspective as to how you would design this.
When you look at the songs of the whales and you put it into what you have available, do you get ideas at all? Have you been doing any studies about the different songs at different years, and have you been able to kind of try to guesstimate what might be going on with just the different songs every year?
So, that's a great question, and it leads me back in time to the inspiration for all of this. So, on a trip in 1986 to Maui, one of many trips I've taken, inspirational trips, I was on a whale watch, and I was so inspired by the whales rocketing from the sea, just as you were, I think, a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
that I asked the tour guide, is anyone analyzing whale songs? Not for musical purposes, but for linguistic purposes. So she referred me to the office, the Whale Song office, the Whale Foundation office. And I went over and I met for the first time Greg Coughlin and Peter Hawkins, the co-founders.
Mm-hmm.
This is in 1986. I told them about my plan to analyze the songs using the tools of my work in Silicon Valley for the elements of language. And they gave me some cassette tapes take home, and about a month later, analyzing them using spectrographic techniques, I almost fell out of my chair because I observed waveforms that were eerily similar to frequency-modulated human speech. So I went back a year later and gave a demo and showed them the plots, and they sent a researcher out to work with me, and she wrote a paper based upon our observations. And what we observed initially was that there seemed to be frequency patterns similar to a dialectical difference, dialect differences between different geographic groups.
Interesting.
So that...
Like different languages in different countries.
Well, different accents at least.
Interesting.
Or at least different accents.
Uh-huh.
So there was an acoustical correlation to the geographic, to distribution of the whales.
It kind of makes sense, though, doesn't it?
And we were able to determine that they had the ability to frequency modulate more than two frequencies. Humans produced all of the phonemes of speech. We have like 35 phonemes, different primitive sounds, using only two frequencies.
And the whales have how many?
Well, more than two.
More than two. Interesting.
But the point is, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Until we take it a step further. The idea would be to get feedback, right?
Yeah.
Not to just observe waveforms on a tape, but to, as I say, get into the water and provide a closed-loop feedback mechanism, similar to this shape-writing app.
And that's what are you working on doing that in a scientific level besides the novel that you're writing?
If I had all the time in the world, I'm trying to do both. So here's what I'm doing. I am actually developing an application. I'm resurrecting the shape writing app that I demoed at the School for the Deaf. I've resurrected it this year on my home PC using MATLAB. It's a scientific programming package.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm got it to the point now where I'm able to individually picture each individual shape corresponding to each word. And this principle can then be taken to the next step.
Which they did, of course, with the apes, and were able to develop a language of sorts with hand language with some of the apes in the jungle, and were able to communicate to a degree.
And I have a metaphor for this application, this interspecies communication device, and it's the name of my the trilogy. It's called The Torch of Prometheus, because literally, as I see it, existentially, it would be a gift of light and sound, a bridge of light and sound for another species.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I've always been interested in sound and communication, of course, has been a large part of my life. And I love what has been done by some of the visionary musicians and composers at the turn of the century when they were also working with sound and what they were creating with light and colors with their music. And this kind of takes it to a very interesting interdimensional level, an interspecies level. And I find it just, I truly find it fascinating. It's a very interesting subject matter, which any good subject matter does. It leads you to questions, you know, and the questions lead you to look and think about answers and expand maybe your limited awareness of what you're doing.
Well, I know that we're in store for an amazing breakthrough, like you said, sooner or later, behind these doors of discovery, and yet we'll be very surprised because we can't predict what that breakthrough will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the more people thinking about this, the better. And I have to agree with you about respecting the territory that is the mammals and the sea and the ocean's life. And to, you know, we do enough damage to this planet on land to really pollute the sound level of the oceans is just, you know, we've already polluted the waters enough, but to pollute the sound level is just very dangerous and very disrespectful to what amazing resource there is down there in life that is so precious. So I'm glad you kind of were able to bring it all together in this book. I know since I've done a couple of books that it is not an easy task to write a book. I know any authors out there that may be listening would truly understand that as well. There's a lot of time and love and energy and money that goes into putting out a book. So I have to applaud your work in this, and also doing a trilogy is even more so more so daunting.
Well, it's just grown organically. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the first to the second novel, and the ideas are forming for the third. So I just want to stress that my subject matter, even though it's a science fiction thriller, the subject matter is designed to pass muster by a jury of scientific peers.
Well, I'm out of time, Howard, but again, I want to tell people your website. It's called thewhalesongtranslation.com.
Yes.
Is the book available on Amazon?
Yes.
And I'm going to be reading this, and I just very briefly looked over it, and it looks fascinating. But I'm so glad I had a chance to talk to you, because truly this is a fascinating subject matter. So I wish you the best of luck and a big aloha. Let us know next time you're coming out to Maui, okay?
And thank you so much for allowing me to speak to your audience. Thank you very much.
Aloha.